Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 63, Peter Kosisa, a.k.a. Craigslist Hunter. Man, I just love this interview. And the way I really want to describe it is that Peter, well, he's a great salesman and he has lots of places he sells his products. He is probably one of the better sourcers. His business is really designed to be a sourcing business. And I think he's done a really great job at it because he loves it and he's doing what he loves and he's been doing it a long time. And I just think that that's just so smart when you hear him talk about that. Really pay attention there. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. Man, I'm excited tonight for tonight's guest because it is a total – I've had a huge run of Amazon sellers. I mean, because that is, you know, most of the circles that I travel in and a lot of the conferences I go to, they're mostly Amazon sellers. And this gentleman does sell on Amazon, but he is a heavy, heavy eBay seller and a retail seller. Welcome, Peter Kosisa, the Craigslist Hunter. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Man, I love watching Craigslist Hunter. Whenever there's a new video, I get an email and I go right there immediately because I know it's going to be real, no nonsense. I love sometimes you struggle with the English language a little bit and I can hear it and it's perfect because I can tell it's so passionate and that and pure. And I just don't think there's many, you know, I don't feel like you're selling me a thing. And that's just so hard to find. So I really do appreciate that. How did you get, you know, you weren't born in the U.S., correct?
Correct. So as you mentioned, you know, you hear that accent, I'll probably never get rid of it, which is okay. But, you know, I came to U.S. when I was 13 years old, back in 1984. So, you know, I've been in States for over 30 years, but like I said, I'll probably never get rid of the accent. So, but it's cool. I mean, it does, you know, actually I get a lot of compliments because of it. So
It's so real to me. I think that's an advantage that you have, because it, you know, a lot of people are, you know, I don't want to call them phony or fake. It's just real. So how did you get, you know, started selling? I mean, were you, you know, you came over at 13. Were you speaking English when you came over?
Not a one word. I mean, thank you, bye-bye, yes, you know, that's all.
Wow.
I knew. I mean,
that's incredible.
It was complete shock, actually, you know, and I went to eighth grade here in grammar school and then high school. And there was, you know, a little bit of struggle. I mean, the first few years, obviously, new environment. I'm originally from Poland, you know, so I came from the Eastern Bloc. So this was like, wow, you know, America, you know, the land of dreams. So, but I, you know, I did okay. I mean, I wasn't the best in school, you know, end up going to college, but unfortunately dropped out after the first semester.
What were you going to learn in college? What was your path that you were trying to take?
Well, I was trying to follow my father's footsteps, and I was going to be electric engineer.
Okay.
But you know, I was always pretty decent with math and good with numbers and stuff. But when I got to college, it just wasn't my game. I always had that vision of doing, you know, always something spontaneous, and it's just, you know, the entrepreneur drive I had it from as long as I can remember. I mean, I was hustling in high school, you know, selling different stuff, and it's just kind of stuck with me. So and you know, a lot of it, I think, it's got to do with my grandfather and the whole reselling and hustle game. Because since I was like from a first grade, as I was 6-7 years old, you know, I remember he would run the flea markets on every Saturday and Sunday back in Poland. And this was totally different ball game. You know, this is a black market we are talking about.
Well, was it communist then?
Yes, yes. It was, okay, it was so, still communist. This was, you know, mid-70s. This is way before, you know, the Berlin Wall went down and everything. So it was something else, you know, to see what's going on and what you can sell and the potential of reselling stuff, you know. That's what got me kind of in the door at the early age to see all this. And it always stuck with me through all the years. And it's just always been kind of passion till I got really older and I understood what had to be done, you know, to really pursue this kind of career, as you can call it.
Well, did you have siblings?
No.
Okay. Because I was wondering, did they, because it sounds like it skipped a generation, right? Your father was not into that?
No, my dad was a very successful engineer for many years. Then he was a professor as well. And, you know, so there was a totally different environment. But my dad and my uncle, they were really big into the hustle game. My mom's brother, you know, spent a lot of time with him. So, which I really, really enjoyed, which, you know, my dad really didn't want to have anything to do with it, you know?
Mm. And so did they, when you said, hey, this college thing isn't working for me, Dad, you know, and especially if he's a professor, so education was the critical thing for him, right? And how did that conversation go when you said, you know, I'm going to try something else? I mean, did you immediately just jump in to start reselling or did you start other careers?
Well, actually, because my dad actually passed away when I was just about to go to college.
Okay.
So maybe if he was around, I bet you he would put his foot down and I would probably go through it just, you know, to more satisfaction for him than really me, honestly, because this was the thing, you know, when you emigrated from Eastern Bloc, you know, from the communist country, the number one thing was get education, and you're going to absolutely succeed in this country, which is absolutely right. I agree with this. You know, I have my own two daughters now, they're both going to college, and it is like, you know, number one thing. But since he wasn't around, what happened, you know, and I had different ideas, and
I think it seems to be working for you.
Which, you know, I'm not that I'm regretting it, but it turned out okay.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds to me like you get to live your life on your terms, which. You know, how many people, you know, you hear those stories of people who went to college and now are working at McDonald's, right? Because, you know, they got a degree that they didn't want, that their parents forced upon them. So, you know, I have mixed emotions about it. What made your decision for your daughters to go to college? Did you help drive that or are you more of, you know, let them find their way kind of thing?
No, it was from actually as they were – from starting from kindergarten, me and my wife, we always pressed, you know, that the education is still, you know, number one. And it doesn't matter what happens really later on in life, but, you know, the education that you're going to gain, it's going to stay with you, you know. It doesn't matter if you change the careers three times, but that is very important, you know.
It's likely it will change three times, four times, five times in today's world, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's not like you get a job for 40 years at one place like your father would have, right? It doesn't happen that way anymore. But having that foundation, I always describe it, everything as a building block, right? You have that foundation established. I think that's great advice. All right, what I want to do is take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about how you started to build, you know, can I call it an empire? I mean, a mini empire for you. I think it's an impressive mini empire. I'll call it that. I think that's a fair statement. You've had amazing sales success, and you've had consistent sales success. As your rant, which we could talk about, said, it was 20 years in the making. Right? You're a 20 year overnight success. Right?
Exactly. I mean, there's no really overnight success.
All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Sure.
right, it's early in 2016. You just came off a slamming fourth quarter 2015. You're sitting on a boatload of cash and you're thinking, I want to do something for my business. I want to grow. Start looking at it in foundation. Look at them as building blocks. Build, build, build. Change your categories. Think about gated categories, specifically shoes and clothing. YourSourcedInventory.com, that's what they focus on. You'll get a list every single day of the week, Monday through Friday, and they're going to give you leads for about 10 items that are in the shoes and clothing, and even dipping into the sports and outdoor category, which is great. These are all gated categories. Listen to some of these ranks. In October, the average shoe rank was $7,571 for $29 profit, a return of investment of 88%. December, 11,000 ranking, profit of $32, 83% ROI. Think about that. Profit of $32. What's your average selling price? Imagine what your average selling price would jump to. In clothing, ranking in October, $6,800, profit of $1,488. But listen to this, ROI of 109%. What could you do to get that 109% return? You got to join YourSourcedInventory.com. We use it as foundational in our business. We think you should too. YourSourcedInventory.com. I'll tell you, it's just so neat talking with Pete and just his experience and how much knowledge he has. I love, again, you know, thinking again about his business when he talks about his retail locations. While, yes, he sells things there, he sells big items, that makes a lot of sense, of course. But he also uses them for sourcing. He designed it so rather than going around and having to pick up this stuff, they bring it to him. And he has a second location that he's opening in downtown Chicago. And just imagine the traffic that can go there sell him merchandise that he can sell on e-commerce channels. I think it's brilliant. I think it's worth taking a look at. And I think if you pull back and think about it, it's a great venue to find products for sale. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Peter Casissa. Oh, how did I do that?
Very good.
The Craigslist Hunter. You would know him if you've seen any of his YouTube videos. Craigslist Hunter is, I mean, he's out there in the YouTube community. He's been there for quite a while. A lot of videos, pops in on a lot of different videos, and really has found a following. How many followers do you have? How many subscribers?
Right now, I think just about to hit 13,000 subscribers.
Think about that, 13,000 subscribers that want to hear what you have to say. That's got to make you feel pretty good.
It is actually pretty amazing. I mean, I started the channel just a little bit over a year ago, and it's absolutely amazing how it grew. But that's what I think when you mentioned earlier what you said, that is, I try to stay really true to myself, what I do, and that's how I like to pass it on to people.
Do you think it's a pay it forward kind of thing? Is that what it feels like for you?
Yeah.
Or paying it back, maybe paying it back, like for your grandfather's effort he put into you, that you're reaping that reward.
I mean, I think so a little bit. I mean, the biggest thing I think for me is, that I really have no kind of fear when I get into something, you know. It's just like always full power, you know, either I make it or break it. I mean, that's how I look at things, and I always stay committed to stuff. I'll grind it out till it's, you know, start producing results. I mean, and I know, and I had quite a few different businesses that did fail. Mm-hmm. You know, this is my core right now. For 20 years, I've been reselling, but in that 20 years, I also did a lot of different businesses. Some of them succeeded. Some of them I sold it. Some of them just completely went nowhere, you know?
Yeah, not everything works all the time, right?
No, absolutely. I mean,
and if
it would, everybody would be just, you know, I mean, it just, the world doesn't work that way. So
right. If it was easy, everybody'd be doing it. And I, you know, you had a rant video, right? The key to success, a rant. And basically, your premise is you got to put your head down and do the work. There's no other way around it. And things will get hard, and you work through it. And then when they get hard again, you work through it. And eventually, you know, they're not even speed bumps, right? They're just, you know, little pests, and you just swat them and you get on to the next one, right? But it took you 20 years to get there. How did you – did you start a shop, or did you start selling on eBay, or even just Craigslist? I mean, is that – how did it come about when you started before you got to as large as you are now?
Well, the shop – well, let me back up, Leah. Let's say 20 years ago, the first steps – the first steps were really a flea market, okay. Which I did it maybe for like two seasons. I hated the whole idea of trying to drag the stuff every single weekend, set it up, worrying about the bad weather and all that stuff. And even though that we did okay with it, meaning far as the sales, I just hated of the whole idea of packing the stuff, you know, worrying about, okay, how come this didn't sold? I got to repack it, go to a different flea. It was just very time consuming to do that. So after a couple of years, and this was mid-90s, okay, and then all of a sudden eBay popped up and Craigslist popped up. And I was like, ooh, what's going on here? So the first steps, you know, were really Craigslist. I mean, which was so new, there was so little competition, and I had so much stuff to sell that this was like a gold mine.
Mm.
You know, because
you would just put it up and it would sell.
You would put it up and it was like nonstop, you know. I would have the only bad thing about it was I was dealing with a lot of bigger things, you know, there were some appliances, you know, bikes, furniture. So it's not like you can meet, you know, at Starbucks and sell somebody, you know, headphones or something. I mean, this is so I got people nonstop coming to my house, picking up stuff. And that got a little bit in a way of kind of, I got two little girls right now, you know, the family is growing, and I got a doorbell ringing every 5 minutes because somebody wants to buy something.
So it's a little sketchy too, right? You start to, you know, at that point when it started, you didn't have all the creepers that they have now, right? I mean, not immediately.
No, it wasn't at all like that, especially at the beginning. There was really people that just wanted, you know, buy stuff and move on. But it just got to the point that, you know, you couldn't do anything. I mean, people were showing up at 10 p.m., you know? So I want this now. I want to come. And you want to make it sale, you know? So, yeah. Come on in, you know. So when eBay came around, then I went through the transition figuring out that, okay, maybe I should stop selling all the bigger stuff and start getting in strictly to smaller stuff that will be a lot easier to ship. And that's how I started, you know. That was the first steps into eBay. I believe that was like around 98, I think I had my first account.
Well, let me ask a question about that, because that brings up a good point. So you were buying things or to sell on Craigslist, right? And you would probably go for a little higher ticket items, right, because you want to sell that. How did you – I mean, did you pass by things because you were like, that's too small to sell on Craigslist, that all of a sudden you found yourself stopping and saying, now that I have this other channel to sell on eBay, I can sell that? And I've walked past it a dozen times, right? Is that how kind of it worked?
A little bit like that. And the great actually thing was that the flea market thing gave me the whole idea that let me get rid of all this little stuff. And all my fellow resellers that were at the flea market, I knew what they were selling and little things that they had. And I had a ton of friends in flea market business that would make me absolute crazy deals if I would pick a lot of stuff from them because they wanted to get rid of this stuff. And that's when I started realizing what can I pick up from them for eBay. And it was absolutely amazing for the first few years. I mean, it really
So you were an early adopter, because you were such an early adopter, you were out there first, you had the cherry pickings before everybody realized, wait a second, why is he buying all this stuff? What's he doing with it? How hard is it to sell, right? And way back, it was actually kind of hard to sell, right? Your pictures were difficult and all those complications. But you were able to handle that. Did you pick that up? I mean, was that easy for you to pick up?
I think overall that part was relatively easy. It was funny because when you mentioned, you know, the early pickings, I would actually buy stuff from these guys straight from their truck. They would just go, not even on a table, they would go from truck to the truck, because, you know, what do you got? This is 4:30 in the morning before anything opens. And, you know, by 8 a.m., I would have a full van of stuff ready, you know, ready to come back home and start listing.
And so talk about that, right? So you now became a warehouse, right? How did that work? How popular was that? Was that your wife very popular?
Never parked a car in a garage for about 10 years.
That's just so fun. I can relate so much. So you had stuff. I mean, did you have a system? Did you come up with an inventory? I mean, did you think that far out? Did you think it would last? I mean,
you know what? It's at the beginning. See, I was always about a quick flip too. So, you know, actually at the beginning on eBay, kind of anything you threw out there, no matter what kind of price, it would sell. And then as we got into early 2000, got a little bit popular, and finally you got some competition and more people selling, and got a little bit struggle there as far as the inventory, because it would pile up on me. And then I decided it's got to be a quick flip. I got to be very competitive. I need to move this stuff. I don't have a lot of room. And I'm kind of till this day like this, you know. I'd like to have the quick turnaround. Unless I know specifically that, you know, I have zero competition, one of a kind, then I'm willing to sit on it for a while to get my money.
Well, and you have multiple places to sell it, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I just wanted to think back to that point. Did you specialize in anything then? Did you find yourself, or were you a jack of all trades?
I always loved electronics, vintage stuff, and actually in early, well, mid 80s to late 80s to like 92, I was a DJ for about 6 years. So I had the...
And those were records.
Those are all LPs, yes, all vinyl.
So you were spinning real vinyl.
I was spinning real vinyl, and, you know, and I had a lot of knowledge as far as the electronics, the equipment that goes with it, and all the audio. So that was a little bit of passion there. So what I will always search, you know, for anything as far as the vintage stuff, you know, when it comes to electronics. But then kind of became... You kind of learn the whole process being on a flea market, what guys are selling. You're looking at the other people, what sells good from them. And that's how I learn. You go out, you talk to them. What did you sell today? Oh, he'll tell you, oh, this was amazing. I got this, and this sold right away for this much. And that's how I learn, you know. And
is that still good advice? If somebody was looking to get into not the Amazon side of the business, the eBay side, because they want to do something, they want to learn that side, because you have incredible knowledge that you've developed over all those years. Is that a good piece of advice for somebody to say, you know, go down and start talking to people, what's selling, what's not, if they'll share with you? And I think most people there love to talk about what they sold, right? I mean, I think there's a little bit of that. You think that's a good advice?
Absolutely. It's kind of number one advice. The more you can talk to these, you know, old-timers, these sellers on flea markets, that they are very passionate about certain, because they are in a niche. Most of the time when you go into the flea market, you'll see, you know, one guy is just selling some, you know, vintage car parts, next one is selling comics, and so on and so forth, and you can talk to them, and you start talking to them, they'll open up because they feel the passion from you too, and they'll tell you maybe not all the secrets of the trade, but you'll gain so much knowledge from these people.
Because what sells in Chicago will sell on eBay, right? If everybody's buying Archie comics, I'll make that one up, right? And they're just buying 1950s Archie comics, and they're really popular. The guy can't keep them in stock. You could reasonably expect that that's probably a pretty popular item throughout the country, and eBay would be a great place to sell it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. That's logical. Okay, so how did you... Were you selling by yourself, or did you have your partner by that?
Excuse me. No, this was by myself. In early 2000s, I actually met my partner, who's my partner till this day. And
that's a long time. I mean, that's rare to hear.
Exactly. And I had one partner before in a different business that went completely, after 3 years of partnership, it was a disaster. And I said,
why was it a disaster?
Well,
don't go into too many details, but I mean, were there things you learned in that partnership that sharpened you for this partnership, I guess is what I was looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the main reason was that I would always put in 110%. I mean, nonstop. And it wasn't the same from the other side, you know. And you get burned out really quickly when you always are nonstop on top of your game and somebody else is not, and you still got to share the profits.
Right.
So,
how do you handle when you're not 100%, right? When you're not feeling well, do you have a partner now that can pull you up and fill in for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's a big deal. And I just interviewed a group of, we call them the young guns in the Amazon world, right? These guys are all doing, you know, seven figures. And their best thing, you know, the best thing I took away from them was, hey, look, you know, there are days that I'm not on, or it's a week, and my friend will call me and say, come on, Peter, get your head out of your butt. Let's go. Here's what you need to do. Or, you know, I need some help. I need some help to buy some things. What can you help me with? And that relationship, it just holding each other accountable in a positive way, in a building up way, rather than a, you know, Peter, you're not pulling your weight kind of way, right? That's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And actually, I mean, right now it's got to the point that we understand each other so well that I can pick up the phone right now and I can tell him, listen, I'm not going to be around for next 3 weeks. Take care of business. That's all I have to say. And I know that 3 weeks later I come back and nothing's changed. Everything is running as smooth as I left.
But that's give and take, right? I mean, that means that you have that same
– absolutely.
Or you gave him that same expectation. That's so cool.
Yeah. So we actually didn't – my current partner, we met in early 2000 to start completely different venture. I met him because I wanted to start another business, which was a demolition company. The crazy as it sounds – he was big into construction, and we got my spouse worked with his wife, and that's how we got met. And, you know, we had similar ideas, but totally two different businesses. And I partner up with him. And we did that for quite some time. Actually, we just sold the business 2 months ago.
So salvage, like, you know, old homes, taking out the mantles and the woodwork and windows and things, or?
No, this was like complete demolition. I mean, we would come in, somebody has a 3,000 square foot home or warehouse, will come in with machines, completely demolish it and haul it away.
No kidding. Wow.
So the way it started, obviously he was in a construction business for a long time. He knew what he was doing. It was kind of new to me. So I kind of brought him into reselling world. He kind of guided me into the demolition construction world. And we did that for about the demolition part for about 3-4 years steady. And then we decided we had a problem, constantly problem, which is going to lead to the whole story I'm going to tell you in a minute.
No, that's okay. This is so cool because I love how one thing leads to another, and that's a common trait among successful sellers. So go ahead.
Within the first 2-3 years, we had a problem really when we did a demo, we would use outside company to bring us dumpster for the demolition project. And throughout the years, we were spending a lot of money on dumpsters. And finally, I said, Adrian, why don't we start doing our own hauling of the debris from the demolitions? So we figure out, okay, let's buy a couple big trucks and let's start our own hauling. Well, as soon as we started that, then we realized that there is a potential in the market just for hauling. And that's when the new company also showed up on a market, which is called 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Mm-hmm. And they mainly haul basically household stuff. You call them up, somebody has a sofa or some garbage or just junk laying around the house, you would call them up. Well, we figured, why don't we start doing that as well? Since we already have trucks, might as well utilize them and start hauling some stuff from people home. And that caught on so quickly, actually, that within next 2 years, we completely put the demolition business away and we did strictly hauling. Now mid-2000s, remember, the economy is strong, everything is good, people are buying stuff, so they have nonstop things in their home that they want to get rid of, okay? Somebody has a sofa that it's only 3 years old, but they're buying a new one, right? Get the old one out. Get the TV out. And we were bringing all this stuff. We actually rented a 6,000 square foot warehouse because all this stuff was coming in, and we figured half of this stuff is in decent, great condition. We don't need to take it to the dump. We can resell it. I said, Adrian, I've been reselling for so long. We got gold here. Not only people are paying us to haul this stuff away from their home, we can make money on it.
That's great. And so that was when the light bulb kind of brightened a little bit. I'm sure it was on all the time, but it brightened and it's like, we got stuff.
We got something going on here. Exactly. We figured, oh my God, I mean, we're making money in a business of and at the same time I'm constantly doing my reselling, you know, my eBay and everything. And now we got this big warehouse that I got ton of room to store all this stuff. So I said, listen, why don't we start like selling right off the warehouse too? So we started doing that, but city shut us down pretty quickly in about 6 months. You know, they realized that, you know, on Saturday morning I have, you know, 100 cars waiting outside to get into our parking lot, which we shared with the two different warehouses. And of course they shut us down. You guys can't do this out of this location, but the light bulb went on that we got something going on here that maybe we should open up a store, you know?
Well, and you know, it's interesting to me. This all started because you were fixing a problem that you had. Right, because you had a problem with getting the stuff picked up, right? And so you're like, you know, let's get into that and fix that problem, and look what it's evolved into. And I just think that's such a great story, how it's completely now moved on to, hey, people are paying us to take this stuff that has value, right? You recognize the value. And I guess it's been that whole training that you've been through all those years to let you recognize value.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So you moved into your first location at that point?
Yes, at that point we opened up a very small store because we were kind of still at the moment that we were not 100% sure that that it's going to go well being like, you know, I never had a real store. I mean, I did the flea markets. We did a little bit of selling, you know, out of the warehouse, and I did ton of sales out of the home, but we, like, this is brand new, a retail store, you know. So we rented a small place, which we outgrew within, like, 2 years. There was, you know, there was stuff packed to the ceiling everywhere. We couldn't do anything, you know. So it was time finally to decide, okay, we need to concentrate, get enough capital, and go after something bigger and open up a bigger shop. And that's the shop I'm in right now in Crystal Lake, that it's about 10,000 square feet.
And that's 10,000 square feet. Now, all that time, you're still selling online in some way or another, but you were not a six-figure eBay seller at that point, were you?
No.
Okay. So you and you were still shipping and stuff out of your garage at that point?
Still shipping. Well, I mean, when we started the little store, everything kind of moved into that store. So
okay, so you were able to get your wife's car back in the garage finally.
Exactly. Everything, oh, everything.
Happy household.
Everything finally got moved, and we started doing the whole business out of the store. So.
Okay, and then you started selling from the store and shipping from the store and that kind of thing. When did you hire your first employee for the store? I guess you had them when the hauling business, of course, right, and in the warehouse. But when you moved into that little dinky store, was it still just you and your partner, or did you have staff at that point?
We had our first employee there in the store.
Okay.
And as far as like retail, eBay, I was still like all over it. I'm the only one doing it. Nobody else touches it, and my partner Adrian was absolutely fine with it because he knew I know a lot about it. He says, I'm not even going to mess with it. I'll let you run with it, you know? And he was the guy that I kind of taught of rest of the hustling, how to get out there in the world and get the stuff into the shop.
The person that you hired in the store, was that a different type of person than you were used to? I mean, because now it's a retail establishment, right? Not a big bulky who can carry, you know, 800 pounds. You want somebody who's going to represent. I mean, is that a different – was that different?
It was totally different, and I was so new to this, and I was like a total newbie. I had no idea who am I even looking for far as, you know, what kind of person I should have in a store. I mean, I knew it's about now customer service. I knew this person has to be relatively well-spoken so he can, you know, but that's about it. And the funny thing is, the first person when we put out the ad that walks in to my store to get hired, I hire him, and he's with me till this day, and he's now
awesome. Now
my manager in my new location.
That's just awesome, though, because that means you again, that ability to recognize value comes through. You saw something in that person that's translated, and I imagine it's kind of like a marriage now, where they just know what to expect, right? You don't even have to say a lot of things, right? It just gets done because they know.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And I think that's one of my biggest strengths right now. And it's been kind of over the years that within the first like 30 seconds or a minute of engaging with somebody talking, I know what's going to happen. I know who that person is, especially when it comes to, you know, buying stuff. I know right away if we're going to make a deal or not.
Hmm. Oh, you have a sense. You've developed a sixth sense.
If you want to call that, yes.
Yeah, well, I think that's an important thing. It, or like a poker player, you could see a tell, maybe? Is that kind of a thing?
A little bit, yeah. That's a good way of putting it, yes.
So now you have a dedicated eBay employee.
No. He was just mainly first the guy that was running kind of retail part of the store, meaning, you know, buying some stuff and selling. I still had no eBay employee. I was still all over eBay myself.
Right. I meant now. So you've expanded the shop. I mean, it's 10,000 square feet. You've got more stuff than you know what to do with, right? And let me ask a question. When did you start the transition? Because you still had the salvage business, a hauling business, I guess to call it, right? Better term. When did you make the transition to start buying heavily on Craigslist?
Well, as soon as we actually started the hauling, we also, I mean, it was kind of constantly because I would always look at Craigslist as another source of income, either selling or buying. Throughout the years, you know, I would always watch what's happening on Craigslist and buy different deals. So Craigslist never stopped. Craigslist doesn't stop till this day.
Right. You run ads on there looking to buy.
Exactly.
You're forever – you really have learned how to mine Craigslist, really. I think that's a good way to describe it. You're mining it. You're getting the most from it.
Absolutely. And then, you know, when we started having hauling the stuff – it's probably now 2007, 2008, and all of a sudden we hit this big wall when it comes to hauling, kind of stops to extra hole. The big crash in 2008, everybody all of a sudden is really tight with their money, and our business plunged. I mean, we had 6 trucks operating at one point, and all of a sudden it goes down to like 2 trucks.
So they were not willing to pay you to haul it.
Exactly. I mean, people really started paying attention to what they have, and they figure out, well, this sofa is 5 years old. Maybe it's going to be still good for us for another 5 years instead of buying a new one. So that business all of a sudden kind of tanked. We also did a ton of like foreclosures with the banks. We had a lot of contracts with the banks, and we did cleanouts. That also kind of a little bit stopped as well. As bank realized also that they don't want to spend as much money on all the cleanouts as well. That's now I'm talking already 2010, 2011, and slowly the business it tanked a little bit. And what happened was we were kind of hardcore again into hauling just hard debris, meaning construction debris. And then I had to reevaluate my business again as far as hauling where the money is. So we kind of dropped off at picking up good, reliable stuff that we can resell, and we were back again to just hauling garbage and construction debris.
Because you had to keep these guys busy. You have investment in these trucks. You got to keep the workers going.
Exactly. So that's when we started really again pounding Craigslist and just doing, you know, garage sales and flea markets and estate sales. You know, that's when the majority of stuff started coming into our store. Now, the main reason really that I went from the small shop to the bigger shop, and this is pretty much at the same time, everything is happening kind of at the same time that the other businesses is a little bit falling behind. We realize, why don't we start advertising that we really buy stuff in our shop?
So you were not a buy sell trade, you were a sell only, and then you kind of, or maybe you were, but you just didn't promote it. And now all of a sudden you said, we're looking to buy, similar to a pawn shop, but you don't offer loans, right? Same concept.
Exactly, because at the beginning, we had all the merchandise to sell. It was not a problem. It was coming in every single day. And then when that stopped a little bit, we kind of, we looked at each other and we said, "What? People are already asking us in a shop, would you buy this from me, or would you trade this for this?" And we figured, okay, there's potential right here that we can possibly operate the similar way as a pawn shop does, but we're not going to do any loans. We're just going to buy, sell, and trade.
And so that's another pivot point. I mean, I guess as I'm sitting here thinking about this story, you've pivoted many, many different times. And I guess that kind of brings us back to your rant where you're talking about nothing's easy. Things are going to come up. Challenges that are outside of your control are going to come up. It's how you react to them and your ability to pivot, right? Because your business today probably won't be your business 10 years from now, right? It's going to be different in some way, probably materially.
Absolutely, in some way. I mean, it's constantly changing. You've got to stay on top of the game. And like you said, there's ups and downs and constantly tweaking stuff and figure out what works the best. But I think within the last few years, I mean, we hit it right on the nose as far as the buy-sell trade shop. Honestly, I can tell you right now, I don't have to, if I don't want to, which I still do because I just love it, but I don't have to go out there and hunt the Craigslist. I don't have to go to the garage sale. I don't have to hit the flea market. I don't have to do any of this stuff. So much stuff is coming into my shop.
Well, let me ask that question because that makes a very interesting, from my point of view, right? From an e-commerce point of view, what percentage of – I mean, you guys are a mega eBay sellers. You're well over 6 figures on eBay. I mean, you're doing incredibly well. You had a great year on eBay, right? That's fair to say.
Absolutely.
What percentage of your eBay sales are walking into the shop as opposed to you going out and finding them at this point now?
I would say about 90%.
Okay, so 90%, and I didn't think it would be quite that high, but that's incredible. So in essence, you're saying, Steve, there is a business. Now, if you understand value and you understand how to buy it right and you're fair to people and you build a reputation over time, that you can build a six-figure, I don't think it's unfair to say that, right, multiple six-figure e-commerce business by buying from other people today. Is that fair?
Correct. Absolutely. Now, just remember, too, that the whole hustle game kind of outside of the store, the return on investment is going to be a lot bigger and greater if you go out and pick something up at, you know, at your local, whatever, Goodwill or garage
yard sale
right. or even flea market or estate sale. Because for me to stay in business when people come in, when they come into my shop, I got to treat them right. I got to pay them enough so I have, you know, possibly return business from them. That's the whole idea. You got to make them happy.
Well, because otherwise they could sell it at a yard sale, right? And so they can come to you. They know they're going to get better than that. They know they're not going to get retail, whatever the current retail value is, because you got to make money at it. You know, but I just sit there and think about, now, if you go out and buy at a yard sale, you're trading time, right? So while you're getting it cheaper, you also are trading your personal time.
Exactly.
And so that cost is built into that cheaper price as opposed to somebody coming there. And I think that's – if people can understand that, I think they could get the scaling of that business. I mean, I think that that's really the transition. I see people saying, wow, you paid so much for that when you've done some where people are coming into the store and you've explained it to say, hey, you know, I got to make sure this guy's going to come back. I can't really lowball him too much, right?
Absolutely. I mean, and there's two ways that you can look at this. I mean, when you go out by yourself and you're hustling those yard sale or flea market, yes, it is your time. But when you have the store, you're saving maybe time, but you got to remember that you got a big expense too. You got to pay the rent, right, the employees. So it's good and bad.
It's a balance. It's a balance. I mean, it's got to be a challenge, right? Because you have a big nut, right? You have to cover a huge cost every single month that an e-commerce seller doesn't, especially if they're, you know, using an Amazon to store their inventory, or if they have a small garage or, you know, at their house. They don't have that overhead that you have.
Absolutely.
So you now are expanding in another location. Will you do you plan on growing your eBay business? How many SKUs do you have in your eBay business now?
You know what? Not that much. I mean, on average, we only have between 200 to about 300 items.
So you really are looking for flips. You're not putting just anything up. You're not putting light bulbs up there because you have them sitting in your store. You're putting up items that will sell, that probably have more value. Have you been able to increase your average selling price?
Yes.
Over time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, and that's the big key. Now, the whole last year we were hoping, and we almost hit the goal, that the average ticket would be $100.
Wow.
And we just came short. I mean, after the whole year, we were at $93, which is still fantastic because the previous year was at like 55. So almost doubled.
And so when you're seeing something come into the shop, do you immediately make the decision eBay or Amazon or shop? Or do you start out in a shop?
Well, it all depends. If we, for example, let's say something comes in and if we already have a couple of the same items in a shop, easy decision, it goes either straight to Amazon or eBay, depending what it is.
Does that happen a lot, that you get a lot of the same things now that you've been doing it for so long? Does that seem natural that it kind of gravitates to that?
Yes, especially on the more popular items, you know, like, you know, the typical gaming consoles, you know, they come in daily.
Mm-hmm.
iPhones
or things like that.
Or any electronics, you know, you see the same stuff over and over again. So if I already have in a shop on display three Nintendo 64s, obviously that's going directly to Amazon or eBay. A lot of times, it all depends on a season too. If we know before Christmas that I can also make good sales, you know, in a shop, we'll hold on to some of the things. You know, we'll know that we have clients looking for this particular item, and then we'll just keep it in the shop because overall it saves me, you know, on everything, on my employee who's gonna take care of the eBay because he does, you know, she doesn't have to do that, or I don't have to ship it, I don't have to take any picture, you know. So it just it depends on an item really, but if it's something that it's not very popular, it always stays in the shop first.
Okay.
I always try to sell it in the shop first, and then we have that kind of 3-month window that after 3 months, if it hadn't moved, then we decide either we lower the price in the shop or we move it to eBay or Amazon.
You know, as I think, you know, a lot of Amazon, I do a lot of Amazon, I deal with a lot of Amazon sellers, and as we always like to say, it's not so much you learn what to sell, it's what you learn what not to buy, right? Do you have that same experience? Do you know what not to buy? Has that developed over time for you?
Absolutely. I think that's the key. That's number one thing. What is kind of walk away from it and don't buy it anymore, even though it looks sometimes tempting that you might look up on eBay that it, you know, it did sell here and there. There's some things that are just not worth going after. So yeah, learning how to walk away from certain things, it's a big, big thing in this game.
Now, what are your plans for growth, e-commerce specific? You're opening a second store from a retail point of view in the city, so you obviously, and it's smaller, so you're going to have to be a little more focused on what you sell there, right? You're not going to be as, you can't be as liberal there. But I assume that will probably give you a bigger channel to buy, right, just because of the volume of people. Is that your hope?
Well, that's the whole idea. The second location that we open in the city, it's a lot smaller. It's like 1,500 square feet. It's mainly, I mean, I know we're going to do some retail there too, as far as, you know, selling some things out of that store. But it's mainly a spot that people can bring stuff and I can buy so I can resell on eBay and Amazon. That's the main goal.
That's smart. That is smart. So do you plan on expanding eBay and Amazon? Because you're expanding your retail, right? So you're putting your money where your mouth is there. Do you plan on expanding your e-commerce business?
Absolutely. I mean, the idea is as soon as this store gets, the second location gets going, we are hoping that it's going to start generating enough merchandise coming in that we're going to expand our eBay by meaning at least, I'm hoping at least by the end of this 2016 that I should have 3 people working in my eBay room. We call it the eBay room. Right now I have a person, only one lady in there that she's absolutely phenomenal, and she's been doing eBay since eBay started, so she knows what it's all about. I'm so thankful that I found this lady. It's amazing. She's been with me for now for a couple of years, and it's absolutely great. And hopefully she'll be my kind of manager of the eBay side as I grow with that business.
I love it. I just love it. I could see, you know, as you're describing it, I could actually see it. I could see the thought that was put into it to say, this is, well, everybody else would say, oh, these are my retail locations. And it's an interesting point. You think of a Gap store or a Best Buy or whatever. All they are about is selling retail, right? So they're worried about that retail traffic coming in to buy. You're saying, hey, that's great. If they come in and buy enough to cover the rent and pay for the labor, that'd be great. But more importantly, if they could funnel huge buying opportunities that you don't have to go out and search for, you could grow this other business that doesn't have the same overhead, right? I think it's just, I could see the vision, and I just get it, and I just think it's so smart and just so well thought out. I really applaud that.
Yeah. I mean, the vision is actually, I'm hoping, but I got to have a plan and a vision, but I'm hoping that by year 2020, which is next 4 years, we'll have 5 stores in operation.
No kidding. That doesn't intimidate you in the least.
That's what drives me.
Oh, that's so cool. And Adrian's right on board with you. He gets that same vision.
Right on board. Right on
I
board.
I love it.
So,
you know, thinking about his background as a contractor, right? He's used to dealing with different people and that. And all those things all really play well into the business that you're in. They're all applicable, right? A lot of similarities.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, the goal of this podcast is to help people grow their business. And, man, you know, just sitting there thinking about, you know, my takeaway from this is going to be is just the plot on paper, that master plan. And I can see you filling in those little segments of a master plan. And I can see it and I love it. I could see some advice there. How would you suggest somebody who's kind of stuck I tend to focus more on Amazon, but it can be eBay. There's a local guy by me that sells $16,000 a month on eBay. He works 80 hours. He says, Steve, you know, I've been to his place. It's amazing to see. He's impressive, but he's killing himself. I mean, he'll tell you he's got a lot of effort. What would you say to somebody who's kind of stuck? They're you know, on Amazon they're selling $20,000 or $30,000 a month, which is not a full time job in my world. Or on eBay they're selling, you know, $1,000 a month. They just can't get past that stuck point. Can you give us a tip or trick that you would suggest that somebody could go out and put into place in their business?
Absolutely. I mean, the main thing, you have only so many hours in a day. You can do only so many things. So focus on what you are the best at, and do that. And everything else, hire people to do the rest of the work. Train them if you can. If they don't have enough knowledge, train them the way you want things done. But you need help. Otherwise, like you said, you're going to kill yourself. Eventually, you're going to run out of time, things are going to go out of whack, and things are going to go south, and business is going to start collapsing because you just can't handle everything.
I could just see. And, you know, I didn't ask you this, but I think I know the answer. You still love what you do? Has it become a job for you?
Never been a job. That's the beauty of this thing.
Okay. And I think that's really where your advice is. If you do what you're really good at and you love it, it doesn't become a job. And that things that are the mundane for you, if you don't like counting, if you don't like writing checks or doing bookkeeping, don't do it. Let somebody else do that for you. And then it doesn't become a job. I think that's just great advice. All right, Peter, the best way to get in touch with you, I have a link for Craigslist Hunter I'm going to put out there because I think people need to see your videos. And just love watching you restore an item. I could see the passion in your heart for doing it. I could see that you still enjoy that. I love that about you. Other way to get in touch with you?
They can, of course, find me also on Facebook as Craigslist Hunter as well. So
okay.
People,
and I'll have a connection for that, yeah. Too. Man, I appreciate you taking the time. I think once people get a chance to see what you're doing, they're going to be hooked as I am. I can't wait for the videos. I love them. And as soon as they come out, I'm one of the first people watching them. I appreciate you taking the time. I wish you nothing but success this year and just continued success with the new store.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did because, again, I think it makes you think. Right, all these things are designed to make you think. There's not a right way or a wrong way. There's your way, and you want to find your why. Right? What's the reason that you're doing what you're doing? And find the piece that you really love. And I could just tell that Peter just loves what he does, and he has figured it out. So I hope you got something from that. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.